Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right, good morning, everybody, and once again, welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside, of course, each and every week is none other than Legends Tour player and LPGA professional Cindy Miller, and we are your hosts here on the Women of Golf. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I heard you bragging off air that it's sunny in Buffalo.
It is. It wasn't sunny yesterday, of course. I couldn't see the eclipse.
No.
But
yeah, me neither. I didn't even go out. I've seen eclipse before, so I knew what they looked like. But yeah, it was a lot of people donned their sunglasses, their special glasses, and out they went. And I just thought, hey, you've seen one, you've seen
them
all. No, no, not at all. It's definitely a very interesting thing, but I've seen them before, and I had unfortunately had too much work to do, so I didn't get a chance to dip out. But it did get awfully dark all of a sudden. So, all right, we got to move on. We've got a great show for you this morning. We're going to be joined momentarily by a very special guest this morning, Davey Weber. She is an LPGA Epson Tour player and a very impressive young lady, and you and her actually, Cindy, have something in common. We'll talk about that in a moment. And a little bit later on, you and I are going to have a discussion, just a little bit of a discussion. This is a book that I have actually written. It has not been officially released, but I snafu'd a little excerpt from chapter 6, and the book is called The Complete Guide to Golf Instruction. And we're going to talk about preparing for D1 college golf. So it'll be, I think, an interesting discussion both for those that want to play D1 and also for the parents, maybe a little bit of an insight into what D1 golf is all about. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the game. All right, let me introduce this morning's guest. As I mentioned, her name is Davey Weber, and she is her collegiate golf career was at the University of Miami, which is very impressive. She had 3 All-American honors and 18 top 10 finishes. On the Epson Tour, she has achieved 12 top 10 finishes and earned a whopping $104,000-plus in career earnings. And in 2022, or actually late 2021, she tied 10th in the LPGA Q Series to earn her 2022 LPGA Tour membership in that season. So, Cindy, let's welcome our guest this morning, Davey Weber.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for
coming. We are fantastic. Yeah. Go ahead, Cindy.
Okay. So was the Biltmore fixed up when you were there?
Kind of. It remains the most played public course, I think, in Miami. So that's kind of a bummer for us, but that's great for the course itself. I don't know. I always really enjoyed playing there. It was a fun course. Sometimes the conditions were good. Sometimes the conditions left something to be desired for, but overall, it was a pretty good time.
Nice. Because the hotel was really a dump when we were there, but that was 1,000 years ago. There's no men's golf team. We used to have skins games against the boys.
No, that's a bummer for us.
Oh, boy. That's how I met my husband. We used to play skins games and then go to the Rathskeller and get hammered. And I met a guy who was a professional gambler, and he was one of Pat Bradley's sponsors. And he used to buy us all shots. His name was Dirtbag.
That's hilarious. It's hilarious that the Rat Skeller was around. I just assumed that that was a recent development, but I was very wrong.
Oh, no, 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 no. And being from Buffalo, we're professional drinkers. And so this guy, I'm not stupid. You know, anybody with $100 bills is buying drinks I'm going to make friends with. And so he told me it was one of Pat Bradley's sponsors, and I thought he was lying. And he said, oh, my buddy Alan Miller's coming to play at the Doral Eastern Open. I'm like, yeah, okay. And he said, I'm going to caddy for him, and I'll get you a free ticket. I said, okay. So I went and I watched, and I'm like, does anybody swing that slow? And so Alan gave me a lesson afterwards because we could actually hit balls on the range while there was a tour event going on, which was weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so Alan helped me with my game, and we became golf buddies. And like 5 years later, I finally said, hey, are we getting married or what? I need free lessons for life. And that was 42 years ago. So there you go.
That's an awesome story.
Right? So let's talk about you now. Forget me. So what's the best part of your game?
Tee to green. I think best part has kind of always been driver. It's always going pretty straight and not short. So
really?
That
so
is
now
definitely
I want
the best part.
You. How far do you hit it?
The average is around like 250 carry, rolling out to like 265, 270.
Are you kidding me right now? How tall are you?
No, I'm 5'8".
Okay. That helps a little bit. Oh,
it
my God.
Like it's long, but I grew up with Ann Van Damme, and, like, I've always been the short one between the two of us, obviously. So to me, it's not long. To me, there can always be improvement.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. All right, what do you do all day? Do you practice all day, or do you get sick and tired of practicing?
No, I definitely practice all day. I practice very structuredly, so I'll plan out my entire week, all my practices. I usually take one day off in the week, and I make sure that I work out 4 times a week. And between working out and practicing, that leaves little room for hobbies. I have a dog to take care of, so I take him on walks into the park and stuff, and that's about my day in off season.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're super organized.
Not by nature. I think that's something I've developed being out on tour, figuring out my way.
Okay. So you had to learn that.
Yes.
Okay. Are you, who do you hang out with? Are you like a, here's what my question is. So there's people that are control freaks that want to win everything. There's people that are motor mouths that never shut up. There's people that are shy that sit in the corner. And there's people that are detail oriented that make lists and are perfectionists. Which one are you?
The latter. Without a doubt.
You're detail-oriented and make lists?
Yes.
Really? So you could be a scientist?
I'm not sure if I'm cut out for that, but when it comes to golf and when it comes to my, like, what I care about, I'm very perfectionistic, yes.
Okay. What was your major at the U?
I double majored in film and advertising.
No way. Film?
Yep.
So you know how to edit film?
Yeah, actually that was my specialty in college, editing.
What did you use? Premiere?
Sorry?
What did you use to edit? Premiere?
We were trained using Premiere.
And now I have to ask you, did you know Norm, Storm and Norman Parsons?
I do not know.
You don't know Norm Parsons from Miami?
I do not.
He was our coach, and he just retired. Okay. All right. I'm going to leave you alone right now. Ted can talk. We should be buddies, but we're totally opposite. I'm a control freak lunatic, as you can tell.
Oh, I thought you would have been the motor mouth, but I guess that's different.
All right,
I'm going to shut up now.
Without a doubt,
yeah,
that's you.
That's true. Daily Show, I'm gonna dial in a little bit more specifically into your game. So obviously you learned a lot from playing at Miami. What was some of the takeaways that have helped you now as you play out on tour? What things do you remember most learning playing at the University of Miami that's really helped carry over into your golf game today?
I think the main takeaway from college, and I really have to think about this because, like, I learned a lot of things in college. Some of it had nothing to do with golf, but definitely do help me nowadays being a professional golfer. But I think golf specific, coming out to the U.S. and playing here and playing different grass types and talking with my assistant coach about the different grass types and how they affect the ball, the spin, honestly, even how the club goes through the turf, I think that's the main thing that I learned. Like, I think it's not like I hadn't seen Bermuda grass before in my life, but Florida Bermuda, and especially South Florida Bermuda, is very different from South Spain Bermuda. And I think being more familiar with different grass types definitely helped me grow as a player, and it's something that, like, I still think about a lot now.
I think that's an important point to raise, because really a lot of, you know, of our amateur golfers out there, you know, they just think grass is grass, but there is a difference between the type of grass that you're playing on, and a lot of them don't factor in that aspect of it. So that's a great point that you raised. Did you have a mentor growing up? Was there somebody special that you kind of looked up to and thought, okay, I really like, you know, this particular individual, and I think I could learn a lot from them? And if so, who was that?
No, I have to disappoint. I didn't really. Like, I had different teachers growing up. Actually, I had one teacher growing up, really, realistically, that helped me out a lot, but I wouldn't necessarily call him a mentor. And even in college, it's not like there was one person where I was just so over the moon about who, like, helped me with everything. So no, not really. I think I've had a lot of people help me along the way, but I can't really say, like, oh, that one person did everything or was something that, like, I aspire to be.
That's interesting. That's good. I mean, I think it's good to have, you know, multiple inputs. I mean, obviously you have to filter out what is important to you, but I think that's good to get different perspectives in that in a variety of different areas. So when you're out on the golf course and things are not going the way that you had hoped, what do you say to yourself? What's the conversation that you have to get yourself back on track?
So for me, when things aren't going well, I think I'm not really the person who can, like, lie to myself and be like, oh, everything's fine, just focus on, like, hitting the ball to the middle of the green, because I am such a perfectionist. So what I try to do is, from the very first ball I hit, after the very first ball I hit, I should say, I try to assess what happens really quickly, whether that's good or not necessarily whether that's good or bad, but why the ball went the way that it did. And if the outcome was what I wanted, then I, like, save something, whereas I think why it went that way, and save that for the next shot, so that hopefully I never get in a position where we're on hole number 12, I just hit three bad shots in a row and I'm not sure why it happens. So I think that's how I would answer your question. I try to assess after every shot basically what happened and what I can do on the next shot, and then try to do that on the next shot. it's not so much like giving myself a pep talk because I'm not very good at that. Mm-hmm. But it's just like being very honest and rational and trying to just get better every shot.
That's good. I like that. I think it's good to have something to help you through those challenging times. And I think that makes or breaks a player on how you deal with things. So I think you deal with it very well, and it works obviously for you. This is sort of a two-part question.
Yeah, and it's something that I've definitely worked on. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Please finish your thought.
No, I mean, it's something that I've worked on like over the last 7-8 months. I hired a sports psychologist and we've been working on things like that and kind of figured out that, sure, there's a place and time for positive self-talk, but I'm not really one to like really hype myself up. So for me, to not spiral negatively, this is the way for me.
Well,
I got to jump
at
in.
Your go ahead.
I got to jump because the facts. It's not like, oh, I got to do better. It's like, okay, why'd the ball go there? What did I do to cause that? And how do I fix it? Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's no emotion. It's just the facts.
Right. The goal for me is to, like, be very level-headed, not go one way or the other. Like, I don't think I'll ever be like Patrick Cantlay, but that'd be cool.
Yeah. Totally agree. Totally agree.
Very good. All right, let me ask this question, Joey. If you've obviously played on the LPGA in events, who were you paired with? Who was the one person that you were really excited to be paired with? And then who was the person that you haven't been paired with that you'd really like to be paired with? So the one that you have been that was really one of your favorites and one that you haven't been yet that you would like to in a future game.
One I have been paired with.
One you have and one you haven't.
Yeah, I can come up with two answers to the first one. First would be Amy Yang. And they're for very different reasons. I didn't really know Amy Yang and then kind of found out she's awesome and kind of a legend. And playing with her was just like such a joy. Her caddy and I are kind of friends, so that was always fun. And then Amy's just like the nicest person ever and very helpful, very funny. My second person would be Lilia. And like I said, for very different reasons, I know Lilia very well. We have the same coach. And I play with her 23 at Pelican, the third round. We had a lot of fun, but she fired, I think, a 64, might have been a 63. It was just like an incredible round. And every time, it was just a very impressive display of golf. When she wasn't hitting good shots, they would still end up like 30 feet from the hole, and when she was hitting good shots, they wouldn't be further than 5 feet. And I just remember I was like, this is such good golf I'm watching right now, and that's really awesome. So those two for very different reasons.
And what about somebody that you haven't been paired with yet?
Asking difficult questions, Ted.
Well, it ain't going to be easy. We're getting you up this early in the morning. We're going to make it tough. No, just somebody that you haven't played with. Yeah, somebody that you haven't played yet on tour, but you thought, you know what, hey, I'd like to really, I like their game from what I've seen, and I think it'd be interesting to play alongside.
I think Minji. I still haven't played Minji, and I'm really interested in, like, her ball striking and seeing that and, like, how she approaches certain things. So probably Minji.
Okay. Very good. All good picks. I think it's interesting. And what's, I think, most interesting about it is it's based on their play and the fact that you enjoy watching them. play good golf. So obviously there's a learning aspect of it too, I would imagine, correct?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If I wanted to hang out with them, I can off the course. Like, I don't necessarily
right, exactly.
need to hope to get paired with them. So
right.
then when I get paired with them, I think, like, those are more the reasons why. I guess, like, another
sure.
could be, like, playing fast. But, off the top of my head, I don't really know that many players that are that slow. So I don't really care. So then the only thing to me that's left is let's just see some good golf and see if we can learn
right.
one way or another.
Well said. Just one other question that I have, and I'll give it back to you, Cindy. What has been the most challenging part for you personally being on tour?
I would have to say the pressure to perform every week because it's your job. And with that comes the financial stress that you put on yourself as a professional golfer, especially as a professional golfer who hasn't made it into, what is it, like top 50 of the world yet. I think that's a very mm-hmm. different kind of stress than if you're there. Just for, like, of course, you want to win every week. And, I mean, someone's doing it right now, which is really cool, just winning every week. But it's not, for most of us, it's not extremely realistic.
Right.
But the pressure of I have to pay my rent and put food on the table versus the pressure of, like, wanting to win and not wanting to be second is very different, I think. And I struggled with the former more so than with the latter. So I would say that is the most difficult part, I think, of becoming a professional golfer. It's like, oh, we have nothing else to fall back on, and all your income is going to come strictly from play, which puts a different kind of feeling on wanting to score well.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people, again, don't realize that. I mean, you don't get a guaranteed paycheck in your profession. It's based on, you know, performance. And, you know, if you're not performing well, then that pay is considerably lower than if you are doing well. So, yeah, I can see for sure. And, you know, Cindy obviously has played on tour as well, so she can certainly relate to that. Cindy, go ahead.
Do you have sponsors?
I've won, but again, like, it's like that stuff is hard. I think girls are underrepresented, and then we have to take on this role of being like an entrepreneur, and I'm happy to do it because obviously this is my career and that's what's required of me. But where the guys have all these people working for them a lot of the times on the LPGA, and like, not even to speak of Epson, it's just like, the player has to do everything. It's the marketing. It's the talking to people. There's a lot more that comes to playing golf than just playing golf on our end.
Oh, trust me, I know. I mean, again, Alan and I are the only married couple in the world that have played on the LPGA and the PGA Tour. So when we got married, I lost my card, and I got pregnant with Kelly, and there was daycare on the PGA Tour, but there wasn't daycare on the LPGA Tour. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. this is really fair, right? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So you're talking to the choir here. I know exactly what you're talking about. So, and again, I think Jody Brothers is doing an amazing job for you guys. So
yeah.
I think it's a blessing that he came from the PGA Tour and sees how unfair it is. That being said, what do you do for fun? You need to have some fun.
So living in LA, there's a lot of options. I have a dog and he's quite big. So what we do is we go on lots of hikes. And this weekend we went to the beach and he ripped it in the in the Pacific Ocean. So, I don't know, all my activities, not all of them, but a lot of them are centered around this German Shepherd right here. So I think that's my answer.
Well, there you go. That's good. And dogs are great. What else? I want to know. I want to hit it farther. I need to surrender, but I can't. I'm in denial. I'm in denial. What do you like most about doing what you do?
I think with golf, it's so unique because you're playing against the course. Like, yes, I'm playing against my competitors, but even if I go out onto the golf course in like an hour, I can get super competitive with the course. And I think that's a little bit different in other sports. And I have an extreme competitive nature. So anytime I can compete, I like it. And with golf, that's kind of a match made in heaven because every day I can go out and do that. So I think the competitive aspect of it, even if it's just for a casual game, is what really got me into it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And let me ask you this, because, again, people don't realize, but when you're not playing and you're in L.A., you need a place to practice, and not every place is going to let you just show up and practice. So where do you practice when you're there?
I've gotten really fortunate. There's so LA has a lot of public golf and very little private golf, and all the private clubs are extremely private. I got very fortunate, and I got a spot at two places in LA, both private courses. They let me out there. One, I have an honorary membership. The other one, I know the director of golf pretty well, and I just text him beforehand, and he gives me the okay usually. So those are my, like, two places that I can come and go kind of as I please. And like I said, it's pretty fortunate for me because that doesn't happen a lot in L.A. Like I said, it's quite private. And had I not had those two places to practice at, I don't think I would have made it to the LPGA.
Absolutely. Very lucky. Awesome. Ted?
I just have one final question, Dewey, for you, and that is, you know, I'm sure you've heard the expression that golf mimics life in so many ways. Has there been any life lessons that you can take away from your play in golf? Is there anything that sort of crosses over since you've been playing? And that doesn't necessarily have to be at the professional level. It could be when you were in college. That has proven to be a valuable life lesson for you?
I think the only thing I can really think of right now is that there's not really a guarantee. And I mean, sometimes you can do everything right and know that you're doing everything right and still not have the outcome that you desire. And that is just something that you kind of have to deal with. And, like, I can think of an example where you hit the absolute perfect drive, middle of the fairway, 270 down, like, on a rope. You get there, and it's just, like, in this big, fat divot. Like, you did everything you could. you execute it perfectly, and now you're screwed.
Right.
There's nothing you could do. It's not like you could have seen the big-ass divot from very far away.
Right.
So that's the easiest example I can think of, but I think you can definitely take parallels from that. It's just like that's kind of life. You try and do everything perfectly and then just accept that the outcome is kind of up in the air. But if you don't try, then you can't even expect the outcome, I guess. So we try our hardest.
Yeah, that, no, that's a great answer, and that's really a great life lesson is that, you know, you're not always going to succeed, even when you do everything right to the level that you want to, but the fact that you continue to try is a great life lesson, and I think we've all been in that position, hit one down the middle of the fairway, maybe not 270, but we've all hit one down the middle of the fairway and found ourselves in a big fat divot, so that's just sometimes life can suck, and you just deal with it the best you can, but it sounds like you've got a great focus and a great future ahead for you. Dewey, thank you very much for joining Cindy and I this morning on the Women of Golf, and we appreciate you again getting up bright and early, and enjoy the rest of your day. And I assume you're back in play next week?
Yeah, I have a U.S. Open qualifier on Monday, so hopefully I get through there. Good luck.
Very good.
Good luck for it, girl.
Good luck, and
thank you
thank
so much,
you very
for,
much
having
for joining.
Us, or for me.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Bye-bye. All right. Dewey Weber, former University of Miami alum. Didn't you got a lot in common with her?
She's awesome.
Very
that
good.
Was great.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then you and I are going to come back, and we're going to talk about preparing for D1 college. We'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those 3 putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. And you're joining Cindy Miller, and I'm Ted Roderico, the host of the Women of Golf Show, and we appreciate you tuning in this morning. We hope you had a chance to listen to our earlier guest, Dewey Weber, who is currently battling it out on both actually the LPGA and Epson Tour. She's trying to, I think, regain her card. I know she finished top 10 in the LPGA Q Series and got her 2022 season, but I think that she probably has limited status or may have to go in through qualifying at present. So she's battling it out on the Epson Tour, so we wish her all the best. All right, this is from a chapter in a soon-to-be-released book that I've done called The Complete Guide to Golf Instruction. And this talks about D1 college golf and preparing for it. And I just put a little bit of information from it. Obviously, couldn't do the whole thing, but want to get your input, particularly, Cindy, because obviously you played at the University of Miami. And I think this is something that both potential players that are interested in going that route, because I think it's important, and we'll get you to touch on that. And also for any parents that are listening that maybe have a youngster that wants to be at a more competitive level. So I'm going to give you a quick overview, and then I'm going to get your thoughts on this, Cindy, because I think you have a lot of valuable insight that you can give our listeners. So a quick overview of D1 college golf. Division I college golf represents the highest level of collegiate competition in the United States, and it's governed by the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA as it's referred to. It is characterized by rigorous competition, with athletes often aspiring to professional careers. D1 golf programs attract top-tier talent from around the globe, offering extensive resources, including coaching, facilities, and academic support. The structure of the season includes fall and spring tournaments, culminating in different conference championships and the national championship. So that's just sort of a brief overview so people understand. What I want to get you to talk about, Cindy, is the advantages for somebody particularly, and again, it's not necessarily that they're going to go that route, but particularly for somebody that wants to play professional golf, this is a route that they probably pretty much need to take. I want to get your thoughts on that.
It depends on their skill level. You know, a really good junior player, and they're winning everything and shooting, you know, below par in all junior tournaments, then maybe they don't need to play college golf and they can go directly to the tour, but they will never have anything to fall back on, like a degree. which I would not suggest. I would suggest always going to college, but most junior golfers should play college golf. There is D1, D2, D3, and NAIA, and depending on their skill level, they would be recruited or walk on a golf team for one of those different divisions, again, depending on their skill level.
Sure.
So NAIA, you know, you may, men and women, you know, girls and boys, different skill levels. So there's some kids that, you know, there's golf teams, NAIA, where, you know, you might, a girl could shoot 100 and still play NAIA college golf. There's D1 programs, you know, Niagara University, some of the girls on that golf team shoot 95 up here, you know, whereas in the South, there's no way you're going to be on a golf team, a D1 college golf team in the South. If you're a girl and shoot 95, you're not going to be on the golf team.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think, you know, again, depending on what your goals are and what your current abilities are, I'm talking, as you pointed out, for juniors and that. But it presents a great opportunity for somebody that wants to and has the drive. You know, somebody like a Dewey Weber, who obviously went to the University of Miami, not only had a good game, but had the mental fortitude to say, you know, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to really work hard. I'm going to try hard. I'm going to do everything I need to do. And that's, again, no guarantee, but that's going to help you, I think, be more successful through a D1 program. And again, obviously, I know there's D2 and D3 and so on and so forth, but I just wanted to, in this particular thing, I wanted to focus on the sort of the highest level, if you will, in college golf. And so what were some of the takeaways for you when you played at University of Miami? What were some of the things that it helped you as you advanced through your career?
Again, it being able to play D1 college golf, I think if we went through the numbers, how many, and I don't know the numbers, how many new freshmen get to play, you know, men versus women each year on a D1 college golf team? Probably not that many. So if you're, you know, a sophomore, junior, or senior in high school and you're looking to play D1 college golf, you need to look at the numbers and say, well, how many kids do get to play? You really need to put the pedal to the metal and look at the expectation and how many kids are going to be recruited and will you get recruited and will you get a scholarship or will you need to be a walk-on? And if you get to a college golf team, will you be redshirted, which means you're going to have to sit out a year because you get 5 years to play 4 years. Now, what do you learn once you get there? You learn to be on a team. You learn what discipline is. You learn, here's the other thing, and I don't think people realize this, and we had Therese Hessian on our program, and you need to know that the college golf coach has been hired by the university, and the university is paying that golf coach to bring in players that shoot low to make that school look good.
Right.
So it's not fun and games. Everything is about numbers and not emotion and not hugs and kisses. So the golf coach is being held accountable to the university to make the university look good. So it's not about, oh, I'm sorry, I shot 85. It's all about numbers. And you right. need to know that you're being held accountable to shoot good scores, if that makes sense.
So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, all I was going to just add real quick was, the coaches are looking, you know, they're not looking – to, you know, have a kumbaya moment, out on the course. I mean, they want their players, especially at this level, to perform. It leads into the next point I want to get you to talk about, competitive mindset. So mental toughness is, I believe, and certainly correct me if I'm wrong, is a critical component of success in D1 golf. There's a lot of components to it in that, but again, you know, they're looking for people that are hungry to compete. I mean, they're not just, well, I like playing golf and it's fun and all that. I mean, to play at this type of level is very high pressure, correct?
Well, is it high pressure if you play really well? No. You know, again, it's all about playing good golf and knowing what you're doing with your golf swing and hitting the golf ball. So, no, it's not high pressure if you're really good at playing. So it's about working on your game and learning how to shoot low scores, but know that you're being held accountable and responsible. And your job, if you're on scholarship, your job is to perform. It's not, oh, we're so glad you're here, and it's all a walk in the park.
Right.
You know, no, your job is to perform. It's a job. You're being paid to play golf is what it is. So
right,
you need to know that you're being paid to play golf.
Right. And obviously you need to, you know, to maintain a positive attitude, and you need to be able to manage stress effectively when you're playing at whatever level. But, you know, particularly if you're going to play at this level, you know, you have to be somebody that is competitive. It's, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, I mean, you can learn anything, but if you haven't worked on sort of developing that competitive mindset, you can't just show up and, yeah, you can play good golf, but you have to be somebody that is, I think, self-driven. And you certainly feed off of one another, off the other members of the team to help, you know, get that momentum going. But you have to have a certain inner drive, that competitive juice is flowing, if you will. So you have to develop that mindset as you're playing. And obviously it gets stronger and stronger as you play more and more, and obviously with your coach's help, that's going to be maybe more fine-tuned. But don't you agree? I mean, you have to have a certain inner drive, and that's why it's not for everybody. Your thoughts?
Correct. It's not for everyone. And again, you need to know. So I think what happens, especially with the girls' side, there's so many scholarships that don't get used. So parents think, oh, my child's going to start playing golf and get a full ride to college to play D1 college golf. And there's only scholarships in D1 and D2. And you need to know that, you know, again, look up the numbers of how many kids go to school and how many scholarships are available and what do you need to shoot. And there's really only, I think there's 4 full rides, and there's probably 8 girls on a team. So your kid's probably not going to get a full ride, because if there's 8 girls on a team, they're not going to get the full ride because they've got to divide that up, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And then mm-hmm. once they get money, they can't take the money away unless the kid does something really, really bad, which I think is wrong, because if somebody goes in and starts shooting 100, they should be able to take that money away. I heard they can't
right.
take that money away. My opinion is wrong. Anyway, so again, it's not like, oh, it's free money and let's just go do this. So yeah, it's a lot of work. Nothing. There is no free lunch is what I'm saying.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Don't make your kids and neurotic.
Right. Exactly. Right, exactly. And it's a commitment. I mean, it's a commitment on both parts. I mean, the school and that is making the commitment to bring you on that team. And, you know, you have to do the same. And handling pressure and obviously expectations, like anywhere, I mean, it's intense. Let's be honest. I mean, playing at a high level of golf, particularly here at D1 College, the expectations, as you pointed out, are very high, you know, certainly from the coaches, your teammate. And even family, you know, sometimes, you know, they know that you're doing, there's a lot of commitment that has led up to this point, you know, junior golf and things like that. So there's a lot of expectations. So learning how to handle that pressure can be overwhelming for some. And we've had a few young ladies on here from the Epson tour over the years that talked about, you know, sometimes the pressure got to them. And you have to learn how to handle that as well as, be realistic in your expectations. So anything that you want to, point out here that you think might be important. And again, this is for not just the, students that might be listening to the show, but obviously particularly parents that are trying to steer or navigate their child in this direction, that things that they need to realistically understand. So what are your thoughts here with as far as handling pressure and expectation?
Well, I think number one, I think the child needs to like playing. It needs to be the child's goal and dream. We just finished a boot camp in Orlando, and we had a mom, a dad, and a daughter go. And the daughter was like, oh, this is so much fun. I'm so glad I came. And she really had a ball, and she did great, and she's 10. And so the dad texted me last night and said, should she go to Under Armour Nationals at reunion in June? And I said, why don't you go take a look at the scores that were shot last year and see how she does? She hasn't qualified to go yet, right? She's got to play in the Under Armour League this year. And the winner shot 8 under par last year, and as a 10-year-old, 8 under par.
Mm. Wow.
And he said, I think she can break 85 if she putts all right. And I said, let me text her, because she doesn't have a real phone, but she's got a way that I can text her on her iPad, right? And I said, let's just see what her goals are. I said, because he goes, well, I want to walk a fine line between pushing her and yet, being too pushy. And I said, I totally agree. And he's a great dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what are your goals? Well, I want to chip and putt better. And I'm like, it's not time. It's not time. She doesn't need to go see what's out there when somebody's shooting 8 under par. And she hasn't broken 90 for 18 holes, right? It's a rude awakening.
Right.
She's 10. So, again, let's just go have fun hitting the ball and say, oh, I could be good at this. And maybe it's time to go play. Again, every child is different. And like Dewi said, she wanted to compete. She loves competing. Everything's a competition. Well, this little girl's skipping down the fairway, and, she's having fun with adults, and, everybody's different, and you just got to be very – so it's not your dream. It's got to be theirs. That's all I'm
saying.
Yeah,
I think –
It's got to be theirs. It's got to be theirs.
Yeah, and we've talked before about, sort of the parents' input, and I think, a lot of parents – mean well, but I think that their expectations tend to be in some cases higher than the students or the child rather. And I think that there's a lot of undue pressure that comes to perform, not just on the golf course, but overall. And I think a lot of times, as we've talked about many times here, that it can be sometimes so overwhelming that it actually becomes a turnoff for the child. And, if your child has aspirations of playing college golf, and particularly at this higher level, there's other factors that have to go on. I mean, obviously they have to be a good golfer. They have to shoot well and score well and compose themselves well out in the golf course. But they also have to find a balance. And that's the fourth point that I want to get you to touch on a little bit. And that is balancing golf and academics, balancing the demands of Division I golf with academic responsibilities. Time management skills become essential here, because again, you might get a scholarship, but if you're, not performing academically, that's going to be a problem. And I'm sure there are some that maybe push it more than others, but that's a balancing act in itself. I mean, you've got to maintain a certain level to be of use or value to the team, but at the same time, you can't be a dummy in the books, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, you got to keep a certain grade point average or you can't, you're ineligible. So,
right.
And when you do play D1, you know, you've got workouts, you've got practice, you've got to play, you've got qualifiers, you've got tournaments, you're going to miss classes. Then you got professors that are giving you grief because you're going to miss classes. You know, my senior year, I didn't student teach because I was going to miss tournaments. So I never got certified to teach, which my goal was never to teach school anyway. But they said, well, you're not going to be certified. And I said, well, I don't really care because I'm going on the LPGA tour, right? Well, you know, you're not going to be certified. I said, well, I don't care, you know, but I'm still going to get a teaching degree. So, again, there's pros and cons, and you're going to get this, and you're going to not get that, and yada, yada, yada. So you got to understand all that. So there's a lot to deal with.
Well said. If you were to sum up for parents listening out there for their child, what would you say if they came to you, and I'm sure you've had this happen, say, I really want my child to play college golf. What would you say to them, for that child to help prepare for that inevitable? And again, obviously, it depends on, you're going to look at numbers and things like that, but assuming that, you know, the stars are aligning, what's that conversation going to be like with that parent? How do they prepare? And how does that child prepare for that inevitable opportunity?
The child wants to play, and the parent wants him to play, and the child is in and wants to do it, then I suggest that we meet and we discuss what tournaments they play in. So let's say they're 12 or 13, and they're starting to break, you know, 80 or 85, and they're working on their game. Then I suggest that we start figuring out what tournaments they should play in and not play in. Some of the parents, when they go to different tournaments, they talk to other parents, and some of the other parents don't play golf. And the worst thing you can do is talk to the committee. And the committee is other parents and other coaches. And sometimes, again, in golf, you need to inspect the source. Kind of like, you know, the parents of the baseball, you know, the baseball parents, the hockey parents, they all talk to each other, and you think they know what they're talking about when they really don't. So you sign your kid up for all these tournaments that no coaches will ever look at, nor do they care about, right? I had a dad say, well, I heard she needs to have an Instagram golf account. And I said, well, she can't break 100 right now. Well, I said, so having an Instagram golf account doesn't matter. And he said, well, I was going to hire this guy to film her swing and edit her swing. And I said, well, again, she can't break 100. Well, won't a coach want to see what her swing looked like before and after? I said, no, because she's shooting 60 for 9 holes right now. And again, you're
right.
Laughing, but he wasn't laughing. And I said,
no.
Don't spend time. And again, I want to say to him, without being snotty, do you not realize that you have two coaches here that played on the PGA and LPGA Tour that played at the University of Georgia and the University of Miami, and we were both All-Americans. And I won back-to-back national championships and finished in the top 10 of the NCAA. I mean, I might be old, but I'm not stupid.
Right.
You know, so ask the coach who's been there rather than some parent or some guy who's trying to make money off you. So go seek advice from somebody who knows, not somebody who's trying to make money off you. And God,
well, and that goes,
don't pay somebody who's got some service who's going to, oh, let me, you know, get your son or daughter's profile out. No, stop it. I got news for you. If your kid's shooting 71 in tournaments, the coach is going to find you. You don't need to pay somebody to put a profile out there.
Well, and this goes to, I want to just sort of piggyback onto that point. And this is really for the parents. You know, Jack Nicklaus talked about in an interview one time about this very thing. And I'm not going to name names, but this was around the time when there were a number of players very early on in the sort of social media platform. And a lot of them were coming out, putting themselves out there, you know, trying to, as they say, you know, become Insta famous and whatnot. And, you know, he made a point, and again, I'm just sort of paraphrasing here, but he made a point. He said, the difference from when I played, he said, my game did the talking. I became known because of the game I played and the tournaments I won and so forth, not because I had a good PR person that put my name out there. And unfortunately, we've morphed into a society where it's all about becoming, let's, you know, become an influencer or what have you first, and then hope that that will propel my game. But you're right. I mean, if you're struggling to break 100, yeah, you might have 10, 20, 30,000 followers, but they're not really interested in your game. You know, you're putting that stuff out there, and it's not going to attract the people you need to. So what he was basically saying was, let your game do the talking. If you get out there and you play and you win and you're doing things correctly, you're going to become well known as a result of it. You're going to attract, it's like, you know, bees to honey. You're going to attract people to you, and you're going to become a name based on your game. I mean, Annika Sorenstam is a perfect example. I mean, she became very well known as a female golfer, but it wasn't because she had a great PR person out there pushing her name and so on and so forth. She became a great female player because she won tournament and she had a great, you know, golf game. And that's really what some of these guys are trying to say. And it goes to what you're talking about here. I mean, spend money on a good golf coach that's going to help your child, assuming, again, that's what they want, to navigate in the direction that they want to go. But to get an influencer or something like that and pay them as opposed to paying, you know, for somebody that's in the business that can really give them the hands-on, you know, direction and needs that they need, it's just ludicrous. And it's just, it goes to show you the, you know, the naivete of some people. And this is one of the reasons why in this particular book, when I put this is something I've been working on for a long, long time. And there's a lot of, you know, trust me, there's a lot of meat. We just touched on a few things. I've actually got a whole chapter dedicated for preparing for D1 college golf. And I did a lot of research. The book is actually called The Complete Guide to Golf Instruction. It talks about various areas, and it's going to be released soon. I'm hoping by the end of this month, but give or take. But it's going to be very soon. And actually, it's one of four books that I've done that are going to be coming out. So I'm going to be releasing that at some point about those in more detail. But, you know, there's really not a lot of information. I get asked all the time, and I don't work with D1 or college golf kids. I do a different area. But what's interesting is you get a lot of people asking, you know, what do I do? And I always say to them, you need to reach out to somebody that teaches golf at the level that you want, that has experience in preparing your child for college golf, if that's the direction they want to go. And there's not a lot of information, and people have no idea, unless they're well entrenched in golf, where to go. So that was one of the reasons why I added this chapter into the book, is I wanted to, and I've spoken to a lot of people who have a lot of experience in this area as I was compiling this information. So that's why I wanted to do that. So sorry for the the shameless plug, but I just wanted to sort of get that out there. Any final thoughts?
No, but you're right on the money.
Yeah. You know, it's important that we rise to the challenges in every aspect of life. And this is just my final comment. What you can learn from, as an example, being part of a D1 college program or any really level, but we're focusing on this today, it can certainly help you later in life. And I think there's so many opportunities, but it's all about balance, and it's about preparation, and it's about what you want in life. And if golf is something that you've chosen as a path for you, then you need to reach out to the people that can best help do that. And our very own Cindy Miller is one of those. So go to cindy@cindymillergolf.com, and you can email her, and she can help get you on the right track. Cindy, thank you as always And great show. I had a good time. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week right here in the Women of Golf. God bless, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.